Everett, thank you very much for doing this. I'm not sure where we find you today, but where are you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on today. I really appreciate it. I'm actually sitting in rainy Cincinnati, Ohio right now.
Okay, I wondered because you most recently worked with the Cincinnati Cyclones, but I do want to hear more about it. Congratulations, first of all, on getting the gig with Seattle. How did this opportunity come about?
It actually started back in February. Ryan Clark, who writes for The Athletic, profiled me for their Black History Month coverage. And Todd Lewicki, the president of the Kraken, came across the article and he emailed me and said he was inspired by my story and loved to hear more about me. We talked for a bit, felt that there was definitely an opportunity for me within the organization. COVID hit, so obviously the whole world got turned upside down a little, but in May he calls or sends another email and says they're still building and still moving forward toward 21 and wanted to know if I was still interested. So obviously I very much was, and for two or three Zoom interviews, a couple of phone calls, and a visit to Seattle later, I find myself in the National Hockey League. So it's been a pretty wild ride, a pretty interesting and exciting journey, but I'm very happy that it has ended up in the position that it has.
He is the recently hired play-by-play voice of the Seattle Kraken. On the radio side, he is Everett Fitzhugh. He joins us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. Now, Todd knows your story. Some of our listeners may have read your story in The Athletic, but for those who don't, why don't you detail your story? First of all, how you arrived calling games in Cincinnati prior to getting this job?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been calling hockey games ever since I was in college at Bowling Green State University. So it's been about 13 years since I've started calling hockey games in college. I was play-by-play announcer for BG for three seasons. And then after that, I went to the USHL league office and worked in their communications and social media department. From there, I spent a year in Youngstown with the Phantoms, also in the USHL. And then I came to Cincinnati. So I've been very fortunate to number one, be in three really good spots after college. And each one of those places has really helped develop me not only into a broadcaster, but also a PR person, a social media person, a marketer, all of which, you know, you have to have those skills to be able to succeed and survive, especially at the minor pro level. And I know obviously at the major junior level up in Canada and in parts of the U.S. So it's, you know, it's been a quicker ride. I know that a lot of people have taken to be able to accomplish this by the age of 31, but it's definitely been a very fun ride and something that I will never take for granted the path that it took to get here.
You grew up in Greater Detroit. Do I take that to mean that you were an ardent Red Wings fan growing up?
You know, honestly, it's funny. I'm a Red Wings fan because they're my hometown team, but I know some of your listeners may not want to hear this, but I'm actually, I was an Edmonton Oilers fan growing up as a kid and even up until up through adulthood. So the Oilers have always been my team.
Why did you gravitate toward the Oilers? Because if we go back 31 years ago, that's late 80s, you're born, your formative years are in the 90s, early 2000s. How come the Oilers?
So it actually, the Oilers are how I got into hockey. You know, being one of, you know, very few black kids in my class and school, a lot of my friends loved hockey and they played hockey. And like I said, I was a Red Wings fan because I was 8 years old and they were my hometown team. So, you know, what other choice did I have? So I went home and I watched a hockey game one night. It was the Wings and the Oilers. And at the time, Edmonton had Mike Greer and George Larocque on the team. And for me to see two black players succeeding at such a high level playing hockey, you know, hockey has and some circles still is considered a white sport. So to be able to see two black faces and two black players play well, that was just so inspiring to me. A couple of years later, Anson Carter joins the mix in Edmonton, and you know, I put all my eggs in the Oiler basket. I became an Oilers fan for that reason. And you know, 2006 was a great year for me when they made the Cup final, and And then the 10 years after that were not so good. But you know, I've been with them through the ups and through the downs. But like I said to someone earlier today, you know, I have to put my Oilers fandom back in the closet because now the Kraken are my number one team.
Yeah, division rival all of a sudden. And what you just detailed, Everett, is further reinforcement about what we've heard from the Hockey Diversity Alliance, what we've heard from minority players across hockey for the last little while, saying, look, we can talk about being inclusive and hockey's for everybody, mm-hmm. but unless we see proper representation, we don't have that inspiration. I imagine you certainly endorse that angle from Hockey Diversity Alliance.
Oh, 100%. I really do. And I think for me, especially in this climate, you know, over the past couple of years that we've been living in, I've always been a big proponent of being comfortable with being uncomfortable. I know that talking about racism, talking about diversity for some people can be uncomfortable. A lot of folks don't want to talk about it. They'd rather just let it go. But I think that in order for us to get where we want to be, not only as a sport of hockey, but also as a society, we need to talk about some of these issues. And I fully endorse what the Hockey Diversity Alliance is doing. And Matt Dumba's speech last week, you know, it was really powerful and it really spoke to me. And I love the fact that now white players and coaches and other members in the National Hockey League have been embracing that message, because for the longest time, you've seen a lot of black people, a lot of minorities carrying that flag by themselves. And I think now that you're having the white majority come in and start to lend their support, lend their resources, lend their help into making, you know, this issue worldwide known, I think that is only going to go and help further these talks and to make us reach that optimal level of inclusion that we so desperately want to get to. Again, like I said, not just as a sport of hockey, but also as a society as well.
Hey, you're like a lot of our listeners, grew up loving hockey, wanted to be in the sport.
Yeah.
Some of them tried to get into play-by-play, didn't get to where you're going to right now. So you're just like anybody else out there. But the fact remains, and this has been widely publicized, you are the first play-by-play announcer in the National Hockey League who is black. Do you feel a responsibility with everything that's going on right now to have a role in the current movement that is trying to get more inclusivity in this sport?
You know, I think that can be a double-edged sword there. You know, obviously with being the first, you know, black team broadcaster in the league, there does come that responsibility. And I've always said, you never really set out to be the trailblazer, you know, that I don't think that's ever anybody's intent. However, if you're able and are ever in a position where you do get to inspire someone, you do get to impart wisdom and help lead, you can't do anything except face that challenge and carry that challenge head on. For me, it's something that I welcome, you know, because I was that little black kid in Detroit who, you know, black kids weren't supposed to play hockey. We weren't supposed to like hockey. And I got made fun of by my friends sometimes because I would rather watch a Red Wings game than a Pistons game or something like that. But for me to be able to show that little black kid or to show, you know, any minority that, you know what, hockey is for everyone. Hockey is for you. You can be a broadcaster. You can be a player. You can be a hockey fan. I mean, I think if we can just get more hockey fans that are representative of our society and of our towns and of our cities, I think this sport will grow exponentially and to where we would like it to go. So, you know, I definitely do feel that responsibility, and it's one that I embrace. It's one that I welcome. And I tell folks all the time, you know, anybody who wants to talk, anybody who has any questions and just wants to hear my story and how I've gotten here, I've got no issue sharing it because I was once that kid and I didn't have that opportunity as a 12-year-old kid, as a little kid growing up. So if I can give another kid that opportunity to have someone to follow, to run ideas, to bounce ideas off of, I think that's fantastic.
He is the newest play-by-play voice in the National Hockey League. Everett Fitzhugh in conversation with us here. He'll be calling games for the Seattle Kraken. You mentioned that you had Zoom calls, and everybody's familiar with that right now. And then you made your trip to Seattle and got to see firsthand what is going on with what we now know is the Kraken. I know people in that organization, and they talk about how the diversity and the variety of voices is so energizing when you first encounter it. Did you find the same thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the fact that not only are they talking the talk, but they're walking the walk as well. They are carrying the torch for not only racial diversity and equality, gender diversity and equality. 54% of the team's executive vice presidents are female. I want to say north of 45% of the entire front office as of right now are either female or people of color. So, you know, they really are trying to not only hire and get people who are representative of the city of Seattle and the community, but they're also trying to get a representative view of where they want this game to go as a whole. And another thing that I was really happy about was just the excitement and the passion that that front office has. The community there, even though there wasn't a name yet, there were NHL Seattle flags. My fiance and I were driving around town looking at a few apartments and going to a few places. And, you know, everywhere we went, you know, there's a new hockey team coming in, right? I think we have that new hockey team. Everybody is just so excited in the area. And you know, for me to be able to help bring that alive and to get in on the ground floor in Seattle is going to be phenomenal. My first year is going to be a lot of content, a lot of video pieces, a lot of speaking engagements, really trying to drum up that support and hype up that franchise. And, you know, we're still in the process of working out that broadcasting deal. So while the role hasn't been defined for me yet, there definitely is going to be a spot for me on that broadcast in some capacity. But just to be able to be a part of this organization and help grow the game, build the game of hockey in Seattle, in Washington, and then also Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, places that are historically non-hockey markets, I think is going to be a lot of fun to be a part of.
You said you went to the USHL right out of Bowling Green, and you were working in a different capacity, social media. You were doing some admin stuff for the league as well. Was play-by-play always that first love that you had to get back to? Why did you jump back into that arena?
You said it. That was it. You know, I fell in love with play-by-play when I was in college. I had my first ever broadcast was my freshman year. I had just turned 18 years old, and I was a color analyst for that game. And being able to watch the game from the press box and seeing that different view and being able to analyze and break down the game, I called my mom that night or the next morning, and I said, you know, we're putting our eggs into the hockey basket. We're going to the NHL. So I've had a love for broadcasting and for play-by-play for quite some time. And when I got the full-time play-by-play job at Bowling Green, it just really lit that fire even more. When I got out of it for that year and a half that I was in the USHL league office, that's the one thing that I missed. I was able to do everything else that the job of working in sports requires. I did PR, I did marketing, I did social media content, but the one thing that was missing for me was that play-by-play piece, and that's why I went back to Youngstown. A lot of folks will go from a team level to the league level. I went backwards. I went from the league level back to a team level because, you know, I was missing. I couldn't scratch that itch, and it was something that I longed to get back to, and then Cincinnati came available and, again, put me in a position to be named to the staff here in Seattle.
So you're trying to get Seattle hyped. They're trying to get Washington State hyped. And obviously they're trying to get people watching hockey right now. It's not the time of year we're accustomed to. We're having the debate with our listeners this morning. Hey, we've just watched the qualifying round, and obviously there are some upsets. The game is going to be missing some stars. Do you want some aspect of the qualifying round to be further instituted into the National Hockey League moving forward, whether it's a 7, 10, 8, 9, or maybe it's just that last wild card spot. Would you like to see a part of this moving forward? What's been your take on what you've seen in the qualifying round?
You know, I haven't minded it. I think it's very, very interesting because, like you said, you know, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, a lot of these stars, a very young, you know, exciting New York Rangers team, obviously the Toronto Maple Leafs once again not being able to get over that hump. You have a lot of your stars not in the game, and the NHL already has the most exciting postseason of any sport. I mean, I think that's one of those, you know, known facts about the Big Four. However, I really did enjoy the best of five series. I can only imagine how much more fun it would have been if there were fans in the stands and to really get that excitement level up. But, you know, I wouldn't mind maybe a scenario where you have two more teams per conference or four more teams per conference getting in. You have a couple of first round buys if you're able to, you know, to get that far and you're rewarded with the first round buy. You have a best of five series for that last playoff spot, sort of like what they do in baseball with the wild card play-in game. But I don't hate it. I think it would be a pretty fun thing to watch, and I know that a lot of sports are trying to find ways to get fans interested, and I myself, coming from a minor league background, I am used to throwing every idea to the wall and seeing what sticks. So for me, I think this would be something fantastic to have a play-in between the last two teams to get that final spot. And then, you know, your top team in the East, top team in the West gets a week off and gets that bye. I think that would be a pretty interesting wrinkle to the playoffs.
Speaking of interesting wrinkles, the lottery goes today. Eight teams that were just bounced are going to have a chance to win it. Are you ardently cheering for one team? Are you cheering for the most chaos possible with a team like Edmonton getting another one, another top overall pick? What are you cheering for today as a hockey fan?
Oh my God! So as a hockey fan, not as an employee, as a hockey fan, I love chaos. So, I mean, if the Oilers can get their 25th first round pick in the last 10 years, like, who, you know what I mean? Maybe that would be fun. But I have a feeling that, you know, something strange is going to happen today. I do feel pretty good for Lafreniere because he is not going to go to a bad team. I mean, assuming he does go number one overall, and that's where I think he's headed. Everyone else seems to think he's headed. There's not a bad team in that top eight. So he's going to a team that is immediately going to be able to challenge for a playoff spot next year. And again, if you're Pittsburgh, if you're Edmonton, if you're any number of teams who are maybe on that bubble, they may even make a little bit of a cup run in his first couple of years, assuming he goes to one of those teams. So from a purely fan perspective, I'm all about the chaos.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, and maybe you're going to get to see him within your division when Seattle starts playing if he winds up in Edmonton. Hey, Everett, this was a great conversation, man. Like you said, something weird might happen today. That's basically what you can say every single day of 2020, and weird good is what it meant for you in getting a job with a franchise that did not exist, a name that did not exist, at least, at the beginning of this year. I'm sure we'll do this again. Thank you very much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.